I love the old story that goes, that talks about a person who was relatively new in their faith sitting on the train on their way to work. Did any of you ever used to catch a train to work? See, most of you grew up in Brisbane, so you don't have to do that. But I grew up in Sydney, and my first job was with a company in O'Connell Street in the very centre of the city. And I used to catch the train in and out from Parramatta every day. And you'd be squeezed in there like sardines. And so when I heard this story, it sort of resonated with some of the sights and things and people that I saw backwards and forwards way back then. But it talks about this person who was relatively new to faith, who decided that they had this long train trip every day on the way to work. So that's where they would do their Bible reading each day. So he's sitting there reading his Bible and he didn't really know where to start. So he started at the beginning, as a lot of people do. Not always the best way to read a Bible for the first time, I've got to say. Much better off if you haven't read the Bible very much. You're better off starting with a gospel like Mark or something like that, one that's fairly straightforward and starts to give you an understanding of who Jesus is, and then go other places. But this person started at the beginning and they got to the story of the Exodus, and they're so excited about what they're learning that they couldn't help but, you know, exclaim out loud. So they're reading away and they go, "Oh, wow, that's fantastic." And the person next to them says, "What?" Says, "Oh, well, I'm just reading here about, you know, the Exodus story, and it says that, you know, Moses held out his hands and the sea parted and the land was dry and the Israelites walked across the land." And the person's gone, "Well, you know, it really wasn't that hard." And the guy says, "Well, it sounds pretty hard to me." He says, "Well, you need to understand that, you know, back then the Red Sea at that part was only about, you know, 10 or 12 inches deep, and, you know, it's tidal and it went out, and, you know, they just walked across." Oh, okay. Then he goes back to reading the stories, and then a little bit later on in the train trip, "Oh, that's amazing." And the person says to him, "Now what?" He says, "The whole Roman army just drowned in 10 inches of water." The Old Testament reading for today, which we're not going to spend a huge amount of time on, picks up exactly that story. But the other thing that happens in that story is that there's a very clear presence of God as they move. And you might remember, if you're familiar with the story, and we did suggest that perhaps it's an appropriate story to read, apart from the fact that we're discerning what sort of journey God is calling us on. It's an appropriate story to read simply because it's part of the way we're journeying through the scriptures at this time. But during the day, they said, the presence of God was seen as like a cloud that led them. And at night, like a pillar of fire, so they could see God's presence as well. So they had a very clear understanding of God's presence. But the tricky part for God's people as they made their journey through that wilderness and in that story is that they didn't know how to live as free people. They were so conditioned over many generations, 300 or 400 years in slavery in Egypt, that they could only discern and understand their place in the world as slaves. So we need to recognise that there is a different way of engaging with the world, that when our life changes, when Christ becomes part of who we are, and we're a different person because of that, then we're encouraged to engage in the world in a different way. And part of what held back those people as they made their journey through the wilderness, looking for this promised land, was that they continued to see themselves as people who were enslaved, rather than as free people, free in the love of God and in all the hope that comes with it. So I'd encourage you to think about that in some different ways, perhaps, and even to wonder about how do we define ourselves. So one of the possibilities in that is that I used to find that when I would speak with young people in schools and things, and we would be talking about what it means to be a Christian, and I'd say to them, "Well, you tell me, what is a Christian?" And even a lot of people of faith sometimes define that by what a Christian is not. So we hear people say, "Well, a Christian, you know, normally might not smoke or swear or, you know, have sex before marriage, or, you know, all these things. You know, they don't drink, supposedly. You know, all of these things that Christians aren't supposed to do. And yet, isn't that a limiting and a kind of enslaved way to think about faith? That when we think about what it means to be God's person, a follower of Jesus, to actually define that by the things that we can't do that everybody else seems to enjoy. Doesn't it make much more sense to define what it is to be a person of faith, to be a Christian, by what we do? To say, well, I look to understand who Jesus is because I see in him a perfect example of how to live completely as God's person. That I recognise that Jesus has died for me and saved me from all of my mistakes, and so now I want to live a life in gratitude for what Christ has done for me. So that means that I'm encouraged to love other people the way that I want to be loved. That I'm encouraged to be forgiving and gracious and generous. Isn't that a better place to be? Don't you reckon? Because I also heard someone say once when they were talking about it, they said there's a lot of don'ts that we can focus on. And yet if we focused on the do's of being a Christian, on the things that we need to do if we're going to be faithful to what Jesus has done for us, our minds will be so consumed about doing the do's that we won't have time to do the don'ts and it'll all be okay. Let's focus on the things that God is calling us to be through Jesus and striving to be the kind of person that Jesus wants us to be, and then the rest will fall largely into place. Especially if you stick with those two primary things that we touched on and mentioned last week. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind and all your strength, and love your neighbour as yourself. If we focus our attention and our energy on doing those two things, we are never going to be far from the truth. Certainly as Paul speaks again today, he has the assumption that everyone is aiming to be Christ-like, that everyone is working out their faith with fear and trepidation, is what he says in another one of his letters, that this is what we're called to do, to seek to understand, to faithfully respond to what Christ has done, striving to be the best we can be with God's help. It won't look the same for each of us. It will vary a little bit from person to person because of the gifts and capacities, the interests and the inclinations that we have. We're sometimes drawn to fulfill different parts of Christ's charter. So if you look back at Luke 4, for example, where Jesus reads from the scroll in the temple and says, "This has come true for you today," where he says, "I have come to set free the oppressed, to visit the captives, to bring healing, you know, and to proclaim the word." All of these, this big list that Jesus offers is beyond any one of us to fulfill. So it's best fulfilled, I believe, when we journey alongside one another. And we have a wonderful example of that that's happened right in this place in the last week. We announced that we were looking for someone to help with the treasury role. And after the service last week, Jan approached me and said, "Tell me a little bit more about this." And I really had very little idea of Jan's background or the sorts of things she'd done in places before, only that she'd come to us about, what, a month ago, Jan? Perhaps 3 or 4 weeks ago, from Thornside via another church. And yeah, you've been on a bit of a journey yourself, haven't you? And Jan put her hand up and said, "Oh, I think I could do that." And I said, "Oh, well, you know, it's the sort of thing that if you can manage, you know, online banking, you probably, and got a bit of an understanding about this and that." I didn't know that you were a retired accountant. I had no idea. She's going, "Oh, yeah, I think I can manage that." You were incredibly humble, I have to say. But here's someone who says, "I can do that. I can fill that part of what's required to help the mission of this church be fruitful." And we all do that in our various ways, the things we contribute. As we came here this morning and people are coming, going, finding their seat, chatting with people, I see Elaine changing the flowers. Don't go like this, Elaine. That's all right. Someone who says, this is what I can do. This is a contribution that I can make. It's all about us making the contribution that we have the capacity to fulfill. But for Paul, as he speaks about these things that we read today, his assumption is that everyone is striving to be Christ-like. It's a basic assumption that he makes about anyone who claims faith. So then, this conversation that he has about what people eat or don't eat, or how they treat different days of the week, falls uniquely into place. Because he's saying, as you meet people who think differently with you about whether they should eat meat or not eat meat, or about whether one day is more important than another, assume, because they have claimed faith, that they are striving to be Christ-like. And then we realise that actually some of these conversations are not quite so critical. And so allowing people the space and the room to express their faithfulness in a different way to ourselves is okay. Now, I grew up at the end, well, I think it was at the end of the time, although I found that for some people that's not quite right, but at the end of the time where Sundays were set aside by a great number of people. Who remembers those days? You know, where you didn't really do anything much at all on a Sunday. Now, that makes no sense to me because one of my biggest days in the week is Sunday, right? It's different for people in my role. So, you know, Sunday school picnics, there was always arguments about whether you should have a Sunday school picnic on a Sunday or not. Do you remember those arguments? And especially if you had things like, you know, competitive races, goodness me, on a Sunday? My goodness. And I can remember in one place I was at, there was an argument every year nearly that we had our Sunday school picnic on a Sunday, and there were things that looked like competitive races, you know, wheelbarrow races and stuff like that, with real wheelbarrows we used to use, right? And there was always one couple in particular who said, you should not be doing this. However, the thing that they didn't realise was that the interesting thing was that when we broke people into groups to participate in those activities for the afternoon, strangely, somehow, you would never think it could possibly happen, at the end of every year when those competitions finished, everybody was on the same points. Four teams, always tied. Isn't that amazing? All it was a way of organising the activities for the afternoon. There was nothing really competitive about it. And yet we recognise that when we look at this reading that we've heard today from Paul, this argument about is one day more special or more sacred than another has been happening for thousands of years. And what Paul is saying is while some people might lift one day up as being more important than another, other people see all days as equal because they're all blessed by God in the same way. But what essentially he's saying is, it's not a central argument. It really doesn't matter that much. It might matter to the individuals, and he says, that's okay. Give people space to express their faith, how they think they should. Because what he's wanting to see people do is to grow in their understanding of Christ. Christ died for those and rose to life in order to be the Lord of the living and the dead. Everyone will kneel before God and confess him as Lord. So we have these strange ideas that float around sometimes. But I think part of what the other thing that Paul is encouraging us to do is to muddle along together, to recognise that we are different from one another, but because we're striving to be like Jesus and not like each other, that's where the focus should be, on Christ and not on you have to be like me or you or someone else. So there is this encouragement that goes there. And part of what helps it make sense is Jesus' emphasis on forgiveness. Jesus doesn't see forgiveness as something that's an additional extra. Jesus, in the way he speaks, in the passage that we read from Matthew today, sees forgiveness as absolutely mandatory. It's part of the way we live. And yet there are times when we think about the things that we see and sing, even in worship, the things that we say and we understand sometimes roll off our tongues a little bit too easily. So, for example, a little while ago, we said the Lord's Prayer. And we said these words, "Forgive our sins as we forgive others." Now, I'm not sure about you, but there's times when I say that prayer and I go, "Ooh, perhaps I need to be rethinking my attitude towards some people." Are we a forgiving people? Do we take the opportunity to continue to be forgiving in the same way that we hope God will continue to forgive us, even when we fall into those habitual sins that we repeat? And that we still hope that when we go to God again and ask to God to forgive us for that again, that God will do so. And then, as the promise is, forget. Not because God has a bad memory, but because God chooses to erase the tape. So that when we come to ask for forgiveness for that thing next time, it's as though we've come the first time. And I'm not sure about you, but I know that for me it's a lot easier to forgive someone when they make a mistake or hurt me or whatever the first time than it is when they do the same thing over and over and over again. Is that true? Are you like me in that way? Where when somebody says, "Oh, I'm really sorry," and you go, "Oh, well, that's okay," and in the back of your mind you go, "Well, that's five times." We're human, aren't we? We're not good at forgetting, especially when it happens over and over again. And that's why they come to Jesus after he talks about being forgiving, about living in forgiving ways, and they come, and the whole thing that starts that conversation is, "How many times should I forgive? Seven? Like, seven's a lot." And Jesus says, "No. How many times? 70 times seven." And I'm not sure that was actually a number that was supposed to come to an end. Right? I'm not sure that you're supposed to have your little, your book or an app on your phone that taps it off till you get to 490 and then you go, "Good, I don't have to do this anymore." I think Jesus just picks a big number that says, no, we should always be forgiving. You know, it's kind of like when you talk to a child. I can remember we used to have a Smarty jar at a kids' event we used to run every year. And it was a prize for the end of the week. And they would have to guess the numbers in the jar. And you'd say to the little grade ones and twos, "Pick a number. How many do you think?" "Oh, I don't know," they'd say. "Oh, well, just pick a big number. 14? Jesus wants us, I think, to imagine the biggest number we can and to offer that forgiveness. And the story he tells, I'm sure that when you heard it read, you're going, how mean-spirited, of a person who has a debt the equivalent to numbers of houses, can't, having had that forgiven of him, can't forgive a debt of a few measly dollars. And certainly for the person who had the authority over that first debtor, when he saw that lack of willingness to forgive that debt, it certainly made him incredibly angry. We are called to live in a way that strives to be as Christ-like as we possibly can and to extend the freedom for other people to find their own way to be Christ's people. To be Christ-like is the aim for all of us. It's not to come and be, you know, Heather-like or Alan-like or Joe-like, you know, or even Emily-like. Not that everyone wouldn't like to be like Emily, right? It's about being Christ-like is the aim. And to allow people the space and the encouragement to do that by praying for one another, praying that we will find the way to be Christ-like, joining together in home groups and small groups where you can explore scriptures together, learn from one another, see how other people are going about their faith, take those things on board that fit you, and perhaps leave aside those things that don't. But together, weaving this richest of tapestries that ends up revealing Christ's face to the world. But the key, we're told today, is forgiveness. And if we take that idea from the middle of that Exodus story, then the other part is to live as free people of Christ, and certainly not people who are enslaved. Amen.